New VatCast to start a short work week for you as we come out of the long weekend. Rancer, I saw you post on Twitter. I know this is a Canucks-related pod, and we'll get to some Canuck material, certainly, in the wake of Friday's press conference and some news through the weekend. But my goodness, like, as a hockey fan, and I guess it would only be better if the Canucks were actually involved in the postseason, but you couldn't ask for a whole lot more than Monday. Like, five games, great drama, elimination, overtime, double overtime, triple overtime for some teams. Like, that was a buffet for hockey fans.
It was incredible. It was an incredible day. We, you know, just marveling at the Winnipeg Jets' depth. Just overwhelming depth. Truly remarkable. And there were a lot of good games. Like, I thought the Florida Panthers third period was riveting. The Minnesota Wild holding on by their absolute claws, like by their fingernails, after taking that 3-2 lead and ultimately extending that series. I think they take that to Game 7, by the way. There's something about the Golden Knights I just don't trust in terms of getting through teams. Like, they always make it hard for themselves. I think they'll do that again. I thought Pittsburgh played really well despite the loss. Ilya Sorokin absolutely on fire, as was Connor Hellebuck. And the Oilers got sent packing. I mean, a pretty fun day of hockey overall, especially from the perspective of those of us on the other side of the Rocky Mountains, I think.
Yeah, you didn't even mention your favorite team, the Leafs, so no? Wow. No response?
No, no. I mean what else is there to say? They're just taking care of business. I mean that was like, you know, Austin Matthews and Mitch Marner weren't going for 35 minutes, and they just overwhelmed the Habs 5-on-5. But man, that power play. Like, Joe Thornton on PP1, I don't need to see that anymore. All respect, or well due respect, to one of the smartest, most interesting, greatest players of his generation. But, like, what's he doing on PP1 in the bumper spot? Like, Joe Thornton, the shooting threat? He wasn't even that in his prime. J-Pat. I don't have any more time. I don't have time for that. I don't want to see it again.
Well, then let's move to Canuck-related matters, because this is a Canuck-focused podcast, and it sounds like you're going to get to see JT Miller on the Canucks power play for a few more years, at least if he gets his wish, because there was these stories emerged at the end of the season that players wanted out, and, you know, JT was unhappy all season. We saw the frustration borne out in front of us on a lot of nights. And then sort of the extraordinary lengths on Saturday, the Hockey Night in Canada intermission, Elliot Friedman reporting with a quote that JT Miller wants to stay and play for the Vancouver Canucks. And then I saw the province had a story that was similar as well. So, look, there are 2 years left on his deal. We'll see where things go ultimately. I'm not sure I can sit here, Tom, and say JT Miller is going to be a Canuck for the rest of his life. But it certainly sounds like that was his camp trying to put this story to bed for now.
Yeah, and the JT Miller thing, you know, I noticed that Bartlett, his agent, also represents Cale Makar, notes in the story that, you know, he doesn't know where this became a story, like how this became a story, and I don't actually either when I think about it. JT, I suppose it came from the fact that JT was just so demonstratively frustrated all season. And the fact that, you know, he sort of took a hatchet to the NHL's restart plans after the outbreak. I think people just sort of put that together and wondered about it. But I don't feel like this was openly wondered about by any media. Certainly we weren't discussing it specifically, were we? I don't think so. So, you know,
I think where what we discussed was, would there be fallout from the way COVID was handled internally, yeah, right?
Like, I suggested there could be, right? Like, right. I suggested in going over the scope and the stakes of this offseason, and I think I was the first to do it, and there's since been a ton of people rushing to do it. Now, I didn't, you know, look, if I wanted to make news or, like, say something really newsy, I wouldn't have buried it 36 minutes into the podcast, right? Like, I was just sort of going over the stakes of this offseason from a Canucks perspective, right? Like, the context, right, yes, in which I presented it was like Hughes and Pettersson, you know, they may potentially have this. And look, I'm not wrong. Like, I Jim Benning expressly said that hadn't happened to this point. Perhaps it doesn't happen at all. But I do think there's going to be fallout. I was never sort of eyeing JT Miller as one of my suspects, personally. And I thought he basically addressed it. I mean, without addressing it directly, but his comments after the final Flames game when he was made available, just, you know, the way that he was talking about this organization, it sounds like he sees his future here, right? And especially the comment about Travis Green, right, where he sort of discussed, you know, that I've had more opportunity here than I ever could have asked for, and on and on. And we know how Green leans on him. With Green done, you know, you'd have to think JT Miller would certainly be excited to get another run of 22 minutes per game, every game, no matter what, beyond this season.
Right. And for people that are trying to dunk on guys like us and say, like, you know, you guys are just making this up. See, it's not a story. We're not even a week into the off season. Like, let the dust settle here.
Yeah.
Right? Like,
I mean, whatever. We see this movie every couple of weeks on Canucks Twitter. We saw it about the P1. We saw, you know what I mean? It's like, these people are honestly sort of creating their Acme, like their detailed Acme sort of spyware, whatever gear they're trying to use. And like, at the end of this, we're going to be maping. Like, it is what it is. This plays out the same way every time. You know, anyway, whatever. It is what it is. I don't think we've seen the last of the fallout from this season story, this off season. And I'm curious to see how things evolve from here. I think everyone in Vancouver should be breathing a sigh of relief that JT Miller is not among sort of the fallout involved sort of collateral damage. Because, look, he's an excellent player. And while he took a ton of criticism in this market, has been called selfish and on, and, you know, his turnovers, his giveaways were a big focus for so many. At the end of the day, JT Miller is one of, like, four or five really good players, really good skaters on this roster. They need him. Straw that stirs the drink and the engine of this team when they're humming. So having JT Miller back in the fold next season is crucial. Now play him on the wing. I don't want to see him at third line center, JPAT.
I had some guy come at me and try to tell me that the whole Travis Green without a contract, see, it wasn't a story. They got him done.
No, it was a huge story.
No, I know, but like you can't deal, you can't really argue with those people, right? Like, whatever, it's Twitter. I laughed at that one, but I thought, like, really, like, that's a take? That this wasn't a story because they finally signed the guy, like, after the season? Come on.
I mean, insane. That's insane. Yeah. Like, it's a, you know, honestly, it's also, I mean, I don't think my feelings in terms of how I grade or rate Travis Green as a coach are a secret, right? Like, I think the Canucks made the right call in extending Travis Green, but I also think that they went about it in the wrong way, to the point where, like, the right decision made the wrong way is still not the right decision for me, right? Like,
yep.
When I analyze a team, I'm looking at process indicators and on. And by having the coach out his last contract right to the bitter end, right? I think you put yourself behind the eight ball for a team that could have used this season a little bit differently in terms of rebuilding Braden Holtby's value, or, you know, getting Jonah Gadjevich more than one game, or maybe taking a longer look at Cole Lind, you know, on and on down the list. Maybe Jack Rathbone playing earlier in the season, right? Maybe he gets 20 games instead of four or five or six or however many he actually played in the final total. You know, to me, those would have been things that are worth it and things that a coach with some security would have been much more likely to consider at length and execute on. And so to me, I look at this and say, yeah, they did the right thing the wrong way. It's still not the right thing. That's sort of how I break it down. So yeah, the idea that it's not a story is ridiculous. Not only is it absolutely very much an important story, but it's also a meaningful indicator that in terms of aligning incentives from the top down, this is, you know, an area that the organization continues to struggle in and will continue to struggle in. And that sort of speaks directly to sort of like the playoffs versus Stanley Cup aspirational thing, which we talked about a little bit on last week's pod, because, you know, this club's now aligned their incentives again so that everything, you know, should be marshaled toward making the playoffs next season when, you know, if your goal is the Stanley Cup, I do think you're better off having gone, you know, 3 years with Green, and creating an environment where really it's about what happens in 2022-23 when the club is going to have the type of cap space they'll need to meaningfully upgrade, where they're going to need to meaningfully upgrade, ready to go. You know, that's their best chance of icing a team that can sort of, you know, puncture through the playoff bubble muck that this club has been stuck in at the best of times over the past 8 years.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We covered a lot of what Jim, mostly Jim and Travis, had to say on Friday. One of the things that stuck with me was this notion about the Canucks getting aggressive here in the offseason. Tom, I mean, that's sort of an ambiguous word because it can mean a lot of things to a lot of people. So I'm kind of curious, in your mind, in that context, what do you think Jim means when he says the Canucks are going to get aggressive, and can they sort of meet dual standards here? Can they have a successful offseason this summer to meet their stated goal of making the playoffs next season without hampering their ability to really cook with gas when these contracts come off the books and they have some money to play with a year from now?
For sure. Like, that's... there just isn't a lot of cap space available. I'm going to do my cap space deep dive this week, JPAT, probably Wednesday. And, like, probably on Wednesday for Thursday morning. So we'll get into the weeds a little bit more here. But, you know, my sort of early estimate is somewhere between 7 and 10. And I'll try and put an exact figure on that and then explore the ways that they can carve out some additional space. But despite them mentioning buyouts, like, there's not a lot of good buyoutable contracts on the books for this team. Like, Jay Beagle's basically buyout-proof. Antoine Roussel, no cap benefit there. You know, there's not really a Brandon Sutter-type contract this year where you'd look at that and say, hey, that makes sense to buy out, except for Braden Holtby. But I think the club would prefer to try and get rid of him in expansion, even if it comes at the cost of additional assets or maybe you retain half. You know, Holtby and Virtanen, and I sort of have been reluctant to include Virtanen in this assessment because, as we've gone over, fundamentally, what he's dealing with, the sexual misconduct allegations that are being investigated in parallel by both the VPD and an independent Canucks-led investigation or commissioned investigation anyway, you know, that's fundamentally not a hockey story, and I don't really want to factor that into the cap math, although I suppose
but
we
it,
have to.
It is, yeah, I mean, it's part of the business of operating the hockey, like, and you're right, like, with all due respect to the process and everybody involved, there is still a business element to the Vancouver Canucks moving forward here that has to be addressed.
Yeah, and I mean, because he's under 26, I do think, you know, a buyout there is probably prudent, you know, this July. Like, I think that just makes sense. The cap hit is insignificant. Harmon Dials sort of documented this at length. So, yeah, I mean, but you know, carving out an additional $5 million in space is going to be really tricky for the Canucks to do, especially in this flat cap environment. And so I'm really curious to see how they go about it. I just think it's going to be tough to upgrade in all the places that you'd like to see your club upgrade, right? Specifically, I mean, I think at the very least you'd have to say this blue line needs a renovation, significant renovation, if not a, you know, foundational change. And, you know, I still think the bottom six is problematic at best, you know, up and down the ranks. Like, I mean, I think there's a lot of work to be done there. And I don't think that work is going to be easy. Like, I do think it's going to need to include, you know, perhaps burying Louis Erickson in Abbotsford, perhaps doing the same with Antoine Roussel, seeing if after Jay Beagle's signing bonus is paid out, if maybe he can be dealt. I don't think that's not a straightforward deal to execute, JPAT, right?
No,
so,
no.
And on down the list, like if you're exploring a Nate Schmidt trade, I don't think that's easy. Travis Hamonic, I think he was a good fit. I think with Travis Green coming back too, you know, one thing you have to consider is a player like Hamonic clearly has a ton of trust from the head coach. So if you're bringing the coach back, like all of a sudden it makes a lot more sense to retain Hamonic as opposed to if there was a new guy and you're not exactly sure how he'd rate him, right? Like now you're feeling pretty confident if you extend Hamonic that you're extending a guy who the coach is going to play top 4 minutes, maybe top pair minutes pretty consistently next season. That becomes something you got to do. But at what price point does that come in at? Because he's not going to be a $1.25 million player for you again, right? And then there's just not a ton of space elsewhere. Plus, you've got to manage the departure of Edler, on and on down the list. And then the opposite of that, JPAT, is, you know, I graphed this, and there's a piece going up at The Athletic today, but I graphed this using a tool available at JFresh Charts Deployment. And the Canucks have one of the most stratified deployments in the league in terms of their forwards. Like, their top six forwards play a lot and play top competition. Their bottom six forwards don't play a lot and play soft competition, and like never the twixt will meet. Like they are completely stratified. There is almost no one in that mushy middle. Like the Canucks are unique in the NHL respect, about how disciplined they are in sort of managing matchups. And even within that equation where you've got like six guys in the top right of the graph and six guys in the lower left of the graph, you then have to go lower still, and you'll find another player on an absolute island, and that's Zach MacEwen, reflective of the lack of trust that he has. He's on a one-way deal for the next season. Like, clearly, now that you're moving forward with the same coach, like, he's not going to get the opportunity that surely he wants in Vancouver at this point. Like, that's surely abundantly clear. And so, you know, there's something on the flip side of that. If you're going to keep Hamonic because you know he's going to play a ton under this coach, if you're glad Miller's staying because you know he's going to play a ton under this coach, you know, I do think you'd probably need to consider finding a way to move Zach MacEwen on, because I don't think we should feel any degree of confidence whatsoever that he's going to play even a regular everyday fourth line role for Travis Green's Canucks.
All right, come on a little trip down memory lane with me, because I think this can be instructive. I think this can be instructive. When Jim Benning says he's going to be aggressive this offseason, who is the best unrestricted free agent signing of Jim Benning's tenure as a general manager?
I think it's Rabada. Yeah, it's Rabada.
Yeah.
I think so, because
that was a hell of a long time ago.
Yeah, I mean, people will say Miller, but they're wrong. People will say Miller, but they're wrong, because
Vanek, I think you could make a case that Vanek was the right kind of signing.
Yeah,
right?
I have time for that.
Yeah, but again, that's going way back, right? Like,
yep.
This is where I understand when sort of people, you know, they fear when they hear Jim say he's going to get aggressive this offseason. We know that his best work has not been done in free agency. And if you've got to go all the way back to really one of his first signings in Radim Verbata and hold that up as his best work in the offseason, you know, in this vein, like, that is a little concerning. It's more than a little concerning.
I'm just trying to go through it, but you're right. Like, the other good work has been on the trade front, right? Like, guys like Levo, you know, Pearson would definitely be a contender for like best non-draft pick move, right? I mean, it's mostly been trade work. Like, you know, when you look at the free agent signings, it's Del Zotto, it's Gagne, it's guys who either didn't move the needle or, you know, moved the needle in the wrong direction because of how inefficient those contracts were. You know, right. Ryan Miller, I guess you could make the case as a positive signing, but like, you missed the playoffs for 2 years by a wide margin while paying a guy $6 million per year. Like, that's not a good signing by any means. Verbata, you know, at least you had the 1 year. Like, you only had 1 year where you missed the playoffs. That was basically no risk. Even though they didn't monetize him, I think he gets the nod in the Benning era. But yeah, you're right. That's lean. Like, that's slim pickings.
Yeah, and I think there's two ways of looking at it. Like, there's most impactful, and then there's best value, obviously. And, you know, I look at the current roster, you know, who's their best unrestricted free agent signing?
We also should be clear, we're not counting undrafted free agent signings, right? Like, because then it would be Troy Stetcher.
Oh, I think you can include Troy Stetcher.
Well, then it's Troy Stetcher. Troy Stetcher out of Nodak, you know, gave the Canucks, what, six seasons of good value? You know, playing regular top 4 minutes. Like, Troy Stetcher, if we're including amateurs, like amateur guys who were amateur ranks before signing, I think Troy Stetcher's the winner. And then you get into Verbata and Vanek.
Okay, and so you're right, those are two separate. One is from the amateur side, one is from within the league, mm-hmm. getting a guy to, you know, convince a guy to come and play here. Like, I look at this roster, you know, who's the best unrestricted free agent signing on the current roster, and you probably say Hamonic. And
oh, yeah, by a lot.
But again, that's sort of instructive in that if that's the answer by a lot, you know, it says a ton about some of the other candidates, obviously, that we have talked about at length over many years in this market. And everybody knows those names. We've already brought them up on this edition of the podcast. So, you know, I just throw that out there again, because, if it's the same management group and it's the same resources and tools available to them, like, what's going to make this offseason different, I guess, is sort of the one key question I have. And, you know, I'll give them every opportunity, but something has to change. They've got to find those efficiencies in the marketplace, and it's a little too soon. Like, I was looking over the weekend, Cap Friendly, and looking at all the guys that are, you know, pending UFAs. The problem is, at this stage, like, a lot of those guys won't even get to market, right? So you can compile a wish list, but teams will still have a chance to re-sign their own guys before the season is done. Like, some of the playoff teams right now, you know, let's see what happens when they get eliminated. So, you know, I don't even want to spit out names just yet, because I think the field of potential UFAs will be narrowed considerably. Now, some others may come on the market, like a Troy Stetcher did when he didn't get qualified by the Canucks. So, you know, we'll save that for other episodes later here in the offseason. But I just wanted to kind of throw that out there as a little bit of context, a bit of a baseline, as people start to think about what might happen for this hockey club this offseason.
It's a really good point. And, you know, I mean, if you're playing, they just need so much, JPEG, right? Like, they just need so much in every respect, and it's not going to be easy. And, like, I have people, you know, in my mentions, for example, being like, what do you think about Alex Wennberg? Like, what do you think about Wennberg? And it's like, yeah, he's fine. I like Wennberg, but I like Wennberg last season more.
Right? Totally.
Like,
yes.
The key is, and the thing that I want to see the Canucks do, I think, in free agency that they haven't done in the past, is, like, the Canucks have got a player type that I like a lot after I like that player type a lot, right? So it's like, there's three guys who fit this mold for me, and it's Dorsett, Ferland, and Roussel, right? And in all cases, we've had this story end similarly, right? Where, like, you know, injuries piled up, right? I mean, with Dorsett and Ferland, it meaningfully sort of ended their career. Roussel's been able to play through it, albeit diminished by what's occurred with his knee, right? Like, he's just not been the same player post-knee surgery. I don't think there's any debate about that at this point, right?
No. Now, to be fair to Roussel, his injuries are a little different, right? Like, I think you would say that both Ferland and Dorsett, their injuries were a product of the way they play, that style, like, the, you know.
But you don't think that's, I mean, I, well, yeah, okay, fair enough. Okay.
Like, Roussel tipped over Marner. Like, that was a weird one, and he blamed it on COVID and said he had lost weight and strength. And
No. But the original knee injury. The original knee surgery at the end of the 17-18 campaign. Or the 18-19 campaign. That he had surgery on, took 14 months, came back midway through 18-19. He hasn't been the same since.
I agree with that, but I don't think that injury was the result of the style that he plays. Like, Dorsett, Dorsett had a neck injury, and, you know, from, like, you know, he puts his body on the line every single game. And Ferland, we know the concussion issues, obviously the result of the way that he plays too.
Yeah. Well, you know, but more than anything, this is a player type that is especially injury prone. Is really what I'm trying to get at, right? Like, like, these guys, when they're in their late 20s, mid-20s, like, these are the types of players. Like, Dorsett was a fourth-line player with excellent defensive results in his prime, right? Fourth-line player, excellent defensive results in his prime, scored like a top-nine guy. Ferland was a top-six player, a credible top-six player with excellent power play value, you know, could forecheck teams out of the building on some nights when he was on. Antoine Roussel was a third or fourth line player who scored at a top line rate in terms of the rate at which he manufactured goals and was a sneaky good playmaker off the rush for the Dallas Stars. Like, those are pieces that you win with. Guys you can slot in lower in the lineup, but they're going to contribute offense at a rate above their slot and, you know, also bring some of the mean physical stuff that, you know, is hard to find in this league, right? The key with those players, though, is you have to find them on the contract before the Canucks sign them, right? You have to find them at 1.5, right? So it's like, you know, Blake Coleman, for example, I'd imagine is going to, you know, clean up in free agency. You know, he's 1.8 for the last two seasons for the Tampa Bay Lightning. That's the Blake Coleman you want, right? Jordan Martinuk might do well in free agency. Same thing, right? He's 28 years old, super versatile, excellent defensive player. But if you're signing him at 3 years, $3 million, right? Like, that's not going to be a good contract for you. Cedric Paquette, same thing, right? Like, the club needs to identify these guys before the contracts that they're going to sign in free agency. And I don't know, you know, Sean Corrali, let's go with another option available on the market, right? Like, you need these guys to win. The Canucks need to find these guys. They just need to not find them in free agency with term attached. They need to find them, you know, in the college ranks. They need to find them in the draft. They need to find them internally. You know, they need a Zach McEwen to take the step, right? Like, they need to find their own people. And I mean, that's sort of how I look at this. This is why free agency can be a really tough place to meaningfully upgrade your team, because you are going to overpay almost certainly, unless you're, you know, finding some one-year flyers and seeking to sort of rebuild value for some of these guys. And that's tough. Like, that's a really tough place to be at. And not a place that the Canucks have found a lot of success playing at during the Benning era.
And so as I watch the Oilers get swept out of the playoffs and they get nothing from their bottom six,
right?
You know, you know that the same sort of howls that we're hearing in Vancouver are going to be heard in Edmonton.
Yep.
And then that's the danger, is all it takes is two teams, but there are lots of teams. I mean, lots of teams, every team wants depth scoring.
Totally.
And all of a sudden, those guys that you mentioned, they get to the open market and it becomes a bidding war. And all of a sudden, $1.5 million guy is now a $3 million player for a couple of years. And we're right back to square one in a place like Vancouver, where we watch too many guys get overpaid on long-term deals at $3 million per season. So, you know, that is obviously the danger. And the Canucks, you know, I've said this before, like, it's not just about building your team in a vacuum, right? If it was just about building the best team and then having somebody judge it, like, that's one thing, but that's not the way pro sports works. You build the best team you can, and then you put it forth, and you've got to beat your opponents who are trying to build the same way. And so, you know, it's never like we get to this, and I'm sure we'll all see it in our timelines too. Like, people will start throwing out names of players that the Canucks should be chasing, but it's not just the Canucks in isolation. It's a marketplace, and the players get some say in that too, right? Like, it's not just about, like, put your money, you know, pick a player, Jordan Martinuk. He's, you know, 40 goal season for the Vancouver Giants. Like, hey, he's got ties to, it make perfect sense. That's fine, but he'll get chased by a bunch of teams around the NHL.
Yeah, he's good. He's good.
Right.
You know?
He'll have options because he's good.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
No, well, and by the way, I'm looking over the list of free agents. You've sent me down a spiral here. And I just want to advocate for one guy. Tell me I'm wrong, yes. But this is a no-brainer. Adam Cracknell, first ever captain of the Abbotsford Arrows. Tell me I'm wrong.
I got all the time in the world for, right? Adam Cracknell.
Like, doesn't that make sense immediately? Adam Cracknell, free agent this offseason, 35. Adam Cracknell.
Bring him home. Where did he play this year? The Oilers system?
Yeah, he was in the Oilers system. I don't know if he, like, played or anything, but it looks like he played for the 30 points in 39 games for Bakersfield in the AHL, and he spent some time in the Metaligaen before that. So yeah, I mean, that's in Denmark. So, and he played well. But yeah, I mean, Bakersfield, 30 points, 39 games, right? Like, still a reliable AHL guy. You know, anyway, Adam Cracknell, first captain of the Abbotsford Arrows. That makes sense. Immediately, I'm just like, that makes sense. They should do that.
All right. Okay. It's funny you mentioned Martinook, because the other guy that I was looking at was Brock McGinn, who, like, I always thought the Canucks needed Jamie McGinn. When he played in San Jose, and then he went to Colorado, like, I always thought he was, like, a tough guy to play against. I always noticed him whenever the Canucks would play those teams. You would have seen Brock McGinn a little bit more, obviously, in your time in Florida, but there's another guy.
And I worked with Jamie McGinn, who is the best.
Right.
I have nothing but good things to say about Jamie McGinn. Do you remember that playoff series against the Sharks in 2011? He won the cup for Boston. He injured every single Canucks defender he hit. It was insane.
He did. Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Like, he was a handful every time. I totally remember him from a decade ago.
Yeah.
Now, Brock McGinn, I think, he just turned 27, if I'm not mistaken, and leads Carolina in penalty-killing ice time. Carolina had the third-best penalty kill in the National Hockey League, but he had some offensive numbers as well. You know, like, again, that's the kind of player, but he's going to be in demand. And you just you can't fall into that trap of overpaying those kind of guys.
No, you can't. And, you know, this is why I think the expansion process is, like, such a fruitful one that the Canucks need to take advantage of, right? Like, right now, our last mock draft had them protecting Cole Lind. Cole Lind got into six games, but didn't get into any after he sort of lost his place in the lineup, right? Considering his age, you know, he'll be 23 before next season. And considering his age and his first step, which, you know, just isn't NHL level at this point, like, I don't think you need to burn a protected slot on him, right? So it's like, you know, whether it's a guy like, you know, Sammy Blais on the top end, but even a guy like Ivan Barbashev or a guy like Oscar Sundquist from the St. Louis Blues, right? Like, there's going to be all kinds of weird sort of depth bets that you can make on some players. And I just think it's incumbent that the Canucks identify somebody they like and acquire a player by those means. Like, I've been banging this drum. I'll continue to bang this drum. And, you know, I just think it's important. I think the team knows about this, by the way. But we've already seen teams like the Calgary Flames monetize Sam Bennett, right? Like, look to duck one of their expansion liabilities at the deadline. We're going to see more trades, like redistributive trades this time around than we had last time. Like, teams are not going to let Seattle build the Vegas Golden Knights in year one. They're just not. And the Canucks can take advantage of that if they're creative about it. But that's a tall order. And I think one thing that, you know, like Jim Benning said, be aggressive, right? Repeatedly in that presser on Friday. And in most hockey markets, like, we're going to be aggressive in free agency. It's like, and it's the offseason. Let's get excited. How can this team be better? You know? And in this market, everyone's like, oh, no. and that's the fundamental challenge that this club and organization and management group is up against, right? Which is that, you know, level of public confidence, which has been clearly dented by a run of lean results that, you know, 8 years running now.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I want to get this in. I was just shopping with my wife on Sunday, middle of a long weekend, doing our weekly shop. And there I am. I'm doing a nice job pushing the cart. And I get a guy leans in and says, good thing I'm not taking a picture of you in the grocery store. And then he wheels up the frozen foods aisle. And I have no idea who he was. I was wearing a mask, like, I minding my own business. But I hadn't been out of the country, right? Like, that's the difference here. I'm, you know, like, anyways, that's the market we live in.
Sorry, was the implication that you like support taking photos of executives in the grocery store?
I'm not even sure. Like, honestly, this guy like peeled off, like burning rubber with his cart up the frozen foods aisle. Like, I have no idea. Like, I didn't take the picture of Jim Benning. I didn't even comment on the picture of Jim Benning in the grocery store. But I haven't left the country. I haven't left the country in 15 months. So
nor were you in an executive role. With an organization that had a significant workplace outbreak cluster, right? Like a little bit different, but
it is a little different. But
you know, I think he was probably joking with you.
He was, but I just like I was surprised. I had the full mask on.
He was just like JPEG, grocery store, grocery gate. Ha-ha.
Exactly. No, that's what it was. And I got a laugh out of it. I got to mention, too, we had a gas contractor stop by our house last week. We had a little bit of work done. Guy comes in to relight the pilot light in our furnace. Just as I'm wrapping up the van cast, and my wife was like, hold on, my husband's recording downstairs, and I guess this guy like did put two and two together, name on the house, Patterson, and like record it. He comes down and he's like, JPAT, VIP. And so
what a beauty.
Yeah, guy goes by the name of Baker on Twitter. I just wanted to say a shout to him, and thank you for your support as well. So, you never know where you're going to find the VIPs. They're everywhere.
I've had a similar story, except mine is much more pathetic, which is that we had a guy come and he was fixing the washer dryer at our house. And, I do this thing, JPAT. Like, here's the thing that people may not understand is you've been doing this forever. And by this, I mean radio, right?
Yes.
And last season was my first time doing regular radio or podcast, right? Like I'm not, I don't have the reps that you have. That my main bread and butter is writing, right? So when we're done a podcast, like I listen to every podcast we do again, and I sort of take notes and try to mark things that I want to improve on, or I said too many times, or what have you, or just normal stuff, right? So I was listening to the VanCast myself when this guy came in, and he looks up at me and he goes, are you listening to the VanCast? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, are you Thomas Drantz? And I'm like, yeah. yeah, unfortunately I am. I am listening to my own podcast right now. That sucks. So yeah, that was my version of the story. Yours is much
That's
cooler.
That's good. You're waving off. Shh, quiet. This is my favorite part right here.
It's my favorite part. It's the part where I'm talking.
Yes. I'm no doubt. Hey, where are we with our first round playoff predictions? I remember that we differed on Vegas, Minnesota. We touched on them right off the top, and that one very well. I mean, they're going back to mini now, so that one could go the distance for sure. Minnesota taking a page out of the Canucks book, by the way, with the Thatcher Demko approach to beating the Vegas Golden Knights. The shots were 22-1 in the second period last night. You know what I totally forgot about hockey in general, just speaking of the Wild and Cam Talbot? I forgot Cam Talbot played 73 games for Edmonton a couple seasons ago.
I know. They could use
73? Yeah, they could use
it. They paid a second round pick for him. Oh, what a disaster that draft was for the Oilers, eh? That was the same draft that that they traded Griffin Reinhart for Matt Barzal. They also traded a second round pick for Cam Talbot. Yikes!
Well, they got their money's worth. I had forgotten that he played 73 games.
I know.
Just a crazy number in today's NHL. I can't remember who did we differ on in the first round? Vegas and Minnesota.
Did you have the Jets?
No,
I picked a sweep. I've never been that wrong in a playoff prediction ever in my life, JPEG.
I remember when we did our picks. Like I figured that McDavid, the way that he was playing, I figured McDavid and Draisaitl would win two games on their own. Like there was nothing that the Jets would be able to do that those two guys would, they would just swing two games in Edmonton's favor. So credit to the Jets. I mean, whatever. It may not have looked pretty and margins were not huge, but they did what they had to do. And Draisaitl had 5 points and McDavid had 4. Like, I know not off the charts good, but they had their points, although I think 3 of McDavid's came in the one game. The other thing for Edmonton, I mean, that 4-1 lead on Saturday that they flushed was the killer, but they score 4 goals on the road on Saturday and 3, or I guess Sunday and Monday. Mm-hmm. 4 and 3 on the road generally should be enough to get you. I guess it got them to overtime is what it got them. And then they couldn't get the next one. But did we differ on Boston, Washington?
I mean, I definitely picked Washington. So if you pick Boston, then yes.
Okay, I think I'll have to go back.
I'm
to go
one
back
of and three listen. So far. Like of the series,
I'll have to go back and
I'm
listen to
three.
The. Yeah, I'll have to go back and listen to the VanCast.
Yeah,
and,
suppose you will. Dude,
see who we
pull,
pick.
Pull a Drancer. but yeah, I definitely had Washington coming out of that. I'm still my head's still spinning because I watched the first 2.5 games, thinking to myself, the Bruins cannot hit Washington's fastball. Like, this is one-way traffic. And it was one-way traffic in that series for 150 minutes, and then it was like something clicked for the Bruins. Like, and I can't tell you what it was, but something clicked for the Bruins, and they just ran roughshod over them after that. It was stunning. I've very rarely seen, like, Boston had won one of those games. They sort of eked out game two despite one-way traffic in Washington's favor. But I've very rarely seen the dynamic of a series flip that dramatically in terms of the flow of play. Like, I've seen results flip because of bounces. But meaningfully, it was like the Bruins took Washington's punches for four rounds, and then just came out and, like, had figured out their fight style and just, like, blew them out of the water from there on. That's a very rare thing. I've never seen that. Like, I've seen that in basketball. I've never seen that in hockey. It was stunning to me to observe.
And just as we finish up, kind of a quick look around this first round. I mean, Tampa goes home. They've got a great chance, obviously, still to finish this thing. But
the Spencer Knight call, that was a big one. That was a gutsy Joel Quenneville big picture call, man. I love it. Now,
yeah,
I didn't love your.
Didn't love your tweet about it, but
I was right.
The Tampa got knighted.
Oh, that was bad. Okay, yeah, fair enough. what
do you think? What would a seventh game at home for the Panthers mean to the franchise against their cross-state rival?
Oh, it'd be huge. It'd be huge to force that seventh game, regardless of outcome. Massive. I mean, look, I think this series has already been huge for the Panthers, but to force a seventh game or to win, I mean, good God, that would be, you know, like fan creating, right? That would be giving South Floridians who haven't seen a meaningful playoff hockey in a generation, like a reason to remember that, hey, this product can be pretty fucking special. I think that would be huge, like a game changer for a franchise that's an afterthought in that market far too often and far too easily. So, no, I mean, honestly, it can't be understated how big a deal that would be. I would love to see them force a seventh game. There's a lot of fans and people down there that deserve that level of attention. So hopefully it happens. Hopefully they force that seventh game.
Well, we get another go-round with Montreal and Toronto. They go back-to-back as the Jets and the Oilers went back-to-back. And, of course, they've got the Canucks and the Flames to thank for that because of the fact that they had to play out the schedule and play out the string and get those 56 in and push back the start of the Canadian division. So it was kind of cool to see the Oilers and the Jets go back-to-back. And now the Leafs and the Habs will do it again. And obviously a big one for Montreal trying to even the series. Otherwise, they face elimination going back to Toronto. We always tell you at the tail end of the VanCast about other pod options for you here at The Athletic. This one's got strong connections. Cam Neely. Remember Cam Neely?
Oh, no.
Once upon a time.
Oh, no.
Cam Neely, the president of the Boston Bruins, joined Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun on the two-man advantage edition of The Athletic Hockey Show. That's coming up on Wednesday here this week.
We should book Pedersen or Peterson just so that we lose that trade.
we'll work on that. We'll add him to the guest list for sure. But Cam Neely's on the two-man advantage edition of the Athletic Hockey Show this week, so you may want to have a listen to that. Check out our comment section for each podcast episode at the Athletic app. Rate and subscribe to the VanCast on Apple. And if you're not already a subscriber, go to theathletic.com/VanCast and receive a subscription for just $1 a month for 6 months. Yeah, $1 a month for 6 months. Can't beat that deal. You referenced it briefly mid-podcast, Tom, but what are you working on? What's going to be posted here later on Tuesday?
Yeah, well, we'll should be posted already. We've got a who's staying, who's going, you know, going player by player and beginning to sort of figure out sort of baseline expectations for what the Canucks might do this offseason. That's today. Then we're going to do a buyout power rankings tomorrow, a buyout ability power ranking of Canucks contracts, and then Thursday I'll have a cap deep dive. But we're going to go in like full bore into sort of projecting what the Canucks' options are, where they need improvement on the roster over the next couple of weeks. One of my favorite times of the year, to be honest with you. So it's going to be really good. I highly recommend everyone stay tuned to The Athletic page.
Lots of material, lots of content. That's all ahead at The Athletic and here on the VanCast as well. For Dranser, this is J-Pat. Thanks so much for listening to another edition of the VanCast here at The Athletic and theathletic.com.